Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. You are listening to the opening sounds of an original composition by Dr. Charles Rochester Young, a composition called Enchanted Moonscape, which will have its world premiere this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, April 20th and 21st, in two concerts by the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra at the Century Theater in Stevens Point. Concerts with the program title Naturally Yours, concerts that take place on Earth Day weekend. Enchanted Moonscape is a fitting piece for the program because the music is a tribute to the legendary Central Wisconsin naturalist, Dr. Fran Hammerstrom, inspired by a book that she wrote for children, Walk When the Moon is Full. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we are pleased to welcome to our Wisconsin Public Radio studios the composer of Enchanted Moonscape, Dr. Charles Rochester Young, and the executive director of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, Ann Huntoon. Joining us by phone, writer, publicist, and friend of the late Fran Hammerstrom, Casey Martin, and a little later in the program, we will be joined by Sharon Schwab, a conservationist who has followed in the footsteps of Dr. Hammerstrom by working to save Central Wisconsin wildlife and its habitat, including the habitat of the endangered prairie chicken. We've got a lot on our plate today, and as always, we invite you to join this movable feast. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Ann Huntoon, these two concerts wrap up the 64th season for the Central Wisconsin Symphony.
That's right. It's been a great season. We've focused on the natural resources of Central Wisconsin, which we all know are quite abundant. And so the pinnacle of the season is this concert where we're able to honor Fran Hammerstrom and her husband's work.
And if people want to get tickets, they're still available, correct? And you have a website.
We do have a website. So if you go to cwso.org /tickets, that'll take you to our webpage, which links to the University of Stevens Point's box office. And the telephone number is on there, and you can see what's left. Tickets are a little more brisk for Saturday than they are for Sunday.
That's Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon.
Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 4. Saturday, we will probably have tickets available at the door at both concerts, but it's best to get them ahead of time just to be sure.
And again, that website is cwso.org. Dr. Young, can I call you Charles?
Yes.
Your original compositions have been performed all around the world in all 50 states in most of the major halls, including Carnegie Hall and the Lincoln Center. You are the coordinator of musicianship and director of the Computer Music Center at UW-Stevens Point, correct?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great position to have at the university. I have great colleagues like Ann and a lot of the faculty performers that will be playing in the orchestra. So,
and you were also named Wisconsin Professor of the Year by the Carnegie Foundation in 1999. Congratulations.
Well, thanks.
Hey, it's got to be exciting to have the world premiere of Enchanted Moonscape, an original work.
It is. It's particularly in this case because this piece pushed me in a lot of directions that I haven't gone in previous projects. So I'm really excited to get it in front of an audience and kind of see what the response will be.
And it was inspired by not only Dr. Fran Hammerstrom, but a children's book by her, Walk When the Moon is Full. Tell me about that.
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me, my family, we live in the woods in Stevens Point, and or right outside of Stevens Point, and when you go through neighborhoods, it seems like almost everywhere in the country, you don't see kids out playing and messing around in the woods like we were always doing when I was a child. And so the connection with the darkness and all the sounds and mystery of the nighttime sounds, as well as getting the viewpoint of that through a child's eyes, is the part that I was most interested in.
There really is kind of an otherworldly, dreamlike quality to the piece, and parts of it remind me of, I hope you don't mind the comparison, but parts of it remind me of sections of Stravinsky's Le Sacre du Printemps, The Rite of Spring.
Well, Stravinsky is certainly a great composer, so I'm thrilled to be mentioned in the same breath with him, certainly.
Well, it's also a fitting piece for the start of spring and Earth Day weekend. And what motivated you to do a concert focusing on the natural world this time of the year?
Well, our last concert has always lined up with the Prairie Chicken Festival. And when we started talking about, the project actually started with our very first concert of the season, Avian Fantasy, where all of the works that we did were had something to do with birds. And this was in partnership with the Lee Yockey Woodson Art Museum's Birds and Art exhibit. And so the season kind of evolved through that project, and knowing that we were going to be finishing up at the same time as the Prairie Chicken Festival, and then looking at music that might go along with that, there just isn't a lot out there. I think there's a Prairie Symphony that we had talked about,
yeah.
But it's the perfect opportunity to commission a piece of music, which is an important thing for orchestras to do.
So did the symphony commission this piece?
We, our board of directors approved the project, and then we, I knew that Charles was the right one for it. He wasn't convinced at the beginning. So.
Well, he lives in the woods, so he's got to be in central Wisconsin.
But this was funded by a group of organizations for which we're very grateful. And
you can name them if you like.
I would love to name them. So the board of directors, actually, all the individuals on our board of directors, contributed money towards the project. Ellis Stone Construction Company, the College of Natural Resources, and then we were able to get a grant from the Community Foundation of Central Wisconsin for this project. And so we were fully funded through donations for this, and we were very grateful for that.
Now, we understand that this concert is not just featuring this original composition by Charles, but you're bringing back to the stage a great musician, double bassist Catalin Rotaro, who taught music for many years at UW-Stevens Point.
That's right.
And a nice guy, too, I might add.
He is a very nice guy. So we're looking forward to spending some good time with an old colleague. And I don't know if you're going to be playing a clip that of the piece that he's going to be playing.
Tell us about the piece.
Well, it's the Haydn Cello Concerto. Well, that's kind of interesting in that Catalin plays the double bass. But he plays that double bass like it could be a violin, or, you know, it's just he plays so beautifully and melodically.
We will be listening to that a little bit later in the show, and there are sections. He was performing in Bucharest with an orchestra,
right.
And he was playing the double bass, and there are sections of that concerto that sound like a violin.
Right.
He's playing way up in the upper register.
Mm-hmm. And the Haydn is particularly light. It's the style of music. And so it's just like he's floating on top of the strings. So it's going to be very exciting. We're thrilled.
Now, you're also featuring Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 in F minor, which has a reputation of being one of the Russian composers' greatest, if not greatest, at least most passionate works.
It's definitely meat and potatoes music, no doubt about it. And we like to end the season on a high note, if you will. And so the piece is maybe an F minor, but we will let people out of the concert hall in a major key.
All right, there you go. Casey Martin, you knew Fran Hammerstrom. You were her friend for a number of years and her literary agent. She wrote a lot of books.
Yes, she authored about 12 different titles, and Walk When the Moon is Full is one of the few titles that's still in print, and it's also available in Japanese.
Really?
So her autobiography was one of the books I was more closely involved with, and getting her Wild Food Cookbook reprinted in softcover.
I've got a copy of that, and
yes.
I was going through it today before the show. And,
well, My Double Life is still available through University of Wisconsin Press. They were the publishers of that title, and any bookseller or people could contact the press directly.
Mm-hmm.
It's available in softcover and hardcover. Another book by Fran's friend Helen Corneli was also authored after Fran's. autobiography. But her last public appearance was at Macmillan Library on August 3rd, 1998. And my husband and I accompanied her to that venue, and then she passed in mid-month.
And her her husband, Frederick, passed before that, correct?
He did. He had passed in 1990. They were a fascinating couple. I often say I knew Frederick less and Fran more.
Well, and in the liner notes, the program notes that you wrote for the symphony concert, here are just some facts. They wrote over 150 scientific papers together, more than a dozen books. They were married 50 years, both committed to the work of conservation, particularly saving the greater prairie chicken's habitat. She studied under the legendary Aldo Leopold.
As did he.
And yet, in their house in Plainfield, they lived very unassuming, almost primitive lives, and they opened their doors to everybody.
They did. It was sort of like Grand Central Station. There was an iron potbelly stove, and closely situated to that was this oval wooden table that was worn through by the number of meals and conversations over it.
You write that she had so many guests between 1949 and the 1990s that it's estimated that 14,000 eggs were served to 7,000 volunteers.
Well, that was one of their innovative ways to introduce people to the dance at dawn, the dance of the prairie chickens. They knew if they got people out to see the bird, to see the habitat, that they would understand that we needed to protect more of the landscape in order for the species to survive. I thought I'd read Glenn, actually, out of a couple of pieces from Fran herself. Her very first book was called An Eagle to the Sky.
Right.
And this was from the preface. Some people feel they are getting out into the country when they hear a rooster crowing. There are others for whom a rooster's crow means people and a return to civilization. Frederick and I have belonged to both groups, but we have spent most of our years weathered by the wind, and we do not know what it is to punch a time clock. The long days afield, fly bites in the heat, and frostbite on snowshoe trails have given me an understanding and respect for animals. Perhaps in some fanciful way, these credentials have been my passport to working with eagles. This book is true. I began writing it with no purpose in mind because I wanted to. However, as the book grew, I came to recognize that the adventures themselves were not the important thing. It is by coming to understand a wild animal as a companion that the gap between man and wildlife is narrowed.
Wow.
So that was kind of her philosophy, is get your hands dirty.
How did, and you've got another piece to read too, Casey?
I do.
Hang on to it. We'll get to it in just a bit, okay?
Okay, sure.
How did the life of this incredible lady, this scientist, hunter, author, and a character, she was a character, right?
It was part of her charm. She, and the books were really more her thing. The scientific papers they worked on jointly. But she'd often say to Frederick when a new book was in the works, "Nice having known you," because she knew the commitment and the time it would take to author it, to edit it, to proof it, and to end up with that final copy in hand.
How did this end up being the subject of a symphonic composition, Anne?
Her life. Oh, my gosh. Well, I first became aware of Fran Hammerstrom when I moved to Marshfield in 1985, and Stu Schwartz at the kitchen table there handed me her book called Strictly for the Chickens. And I knew after I read that book, I wanted to know more about this woman. And so I've heard her speak. I heard her speak down in Poinette through an Audubon event down there not too long before she passed away. And so when this project started to unfold and Charles agreed to write the piece, then my diving into her life became in earnest. And I was telling Casey the other day that it's sort of like peeling an onion away. You just keep finding more and more and more about this incredible woman. And I have always talked about her as being one of my imaginary mentors. I wish I had known her. Because
have you been to her house?
Yes.
Isn't that kitchen something else? The hand pump and the sink? Mm-hmm. I think she didn't even have running water.
No, but some of the things that I like learning about her is that she and Frederick loved to dance, you know, and they would put music on the turntable and dance. And so she loved life, too. I mean, there were so many aspects to her life that are so fascinating. Not only did we, and Charles can chime in on this, too, but we got to go through the house in September and also go to the pond where they spent a lot of time.
Charles?
Yeah, actually, it was a great experience to be able to go through the house and see everything pretty much the way she walked out of it all those years ago. And then
she even had a dress on one of the beds upstairs.
Right. And then it was a particularly extraordinary opportunity that I had to go out on one of the full moons with my daughter and be out on the property and try and recreate some of the adventures that they might have had when they were creating the stories for the book.
And Glenn, I just need to interject too, the premise of the book is that, and the science of the book is that there are 13 moons in a year, not just 12. And that if they were even in a city, the children would kind of pout and say, oh, I guess we're not going on the walk. And Franz said, no, it's wherever we are that we're going to walk when the moon is full.
We're going to walk when the moon is full. When we come back, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to hear some more of the Enchanted Moonscape piece dedicated to the memory of Fran Hammerstrom, performed this weekend, Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra Concerts at Century Theater in Stevens Point. CWSO.org if you're interested in tickets or finding out more. 1-800-780-9742 if you're interested in joining our conversation. It's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg with Casey Martin, Ann Huntoon, and Charles Rochester Young. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
We have a flood watch in effect through Friday morning if you're in a low-lying area in north-central Wisconsin. Tonight, rain and drizzle mixing with snow after midnight, an overnight low of 30 degrees. Friday, light snow up to an inch of accumulation. Blustery, a high of 36, turning partly cloudy at night with a low of 22. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 42, a low of 24. Sunday, cloudy, a chance of light rain mixed with light snow with a high of 48 and a low of 38. We've got cloudy skies across north-central Wisconsin at this hour. Drizzling rain in Eagle River, mixed rain and snow in Land O'Lakes where it's 34 degrees, 36 in Woodruff, Antigo, and Stevens Point, 35 in Rhinelander, 41 in Wapaka, 39 in Wisconsin Rapids, and outside our studio in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got Ann Huntoon of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, Casey Martin, a writer and friend of the late Fran Hammerstrom, and a man who wrote a piece of music dedicated to her life and her memory, Charles Rochester Young. Charles, how did you put the piece together? How did you go about that?
Wow, what a process. Usually when you write a piece, you start just brainstorming ideas and putting things together, and then you end up throwing out 90% of what you put together. This project was very different because I wanted to create in the spirit of Fran Hammerstrom and the way that she got people involved in nature. I didn't think that she would want a piece if she were responsible for writing an orchestra piece about nature. I didn't think that she would be interested in writing a piece about it, but she would try and recreate the experience itself.
And the music works in the sounds of birds, and the orchestra itself at times mimics birds and other wildlife. Let's listen to a portion of Enchanted Moonscape in which you work in the sounds of a bird that's familiar to anybody who's camped in a northern Wisconsin forest, especially if you're trying to sleep just before daybreak, the whippoorwill. Here's a segment of Enchanted Moonscape by Charles Rochester Young.
Thank you.
It's an excerpt of Enchanted Moonscape. You can hear the entire piece at the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra concerts this Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Century Theater in Stevens Point. Charles, you've got the birds mixed in. Where did you get the sound for that?
Well, there's some extraordinary people that I got to meet partially through Sharon Schwab, who I think is going to be on the program later.
Yeah, she'll be joining us in a few minutes.
And she had put me in touch with some people that have made some extraordinary recordings that some of them are month-long, in fact. And I contacted one of these gentlemen and said, I'm looking for this and this and this. And he started telling me stories about that he got the whippoorwill recording 10 feet away from it and things like that that are pretty extraordinary. And there's another
and then,
animal.
And then you have the woodwinds, the clarinets, I guess, mimicking the whippoorwill at times.
Yeah, the flute and the harp and different.
And the harp, yeah, the harp and the flute playing off of each other. Mm-hmm. And there were other sounds in there, and I couldn't tell if they were bird sounds or the orchestra doing the bird sounds. It sounded like the ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk of a bittern, of an American bittern.
Well, there's a lot of different sounds and a lot of surprises, too. One of the things that is very unique about this piece is that on a recording, you only get part of the picture, that it's really designed for live performance, and that is that the sound is going to come from a lot of different directions and vantage points and hopefully change the way that audiences and orchestras respond to one another in an interactive fashion.
And we want to mention, too, that what you just heard isn't even a professional recording.
Right.
You had a little portable recorder.
Right.
And you literally pulled it out and recorded that live as it was performed during rehearsal a couple of nights ago in Stevens Point.
Right. And so there's a lot of different things involved in the project. There's going to be a lot of different sounds, a lot of things will come from different directions with different instruments and instruments simulating nature and natural sounds and all of it integrated together.
So. And how challenging is it for a symphony orchestra to recreate something like this?
Well, it's a good piece of work. So our job is to do what the composer intends us to do to communicate this to the audience. And I hope that Charles is happy with that. Mm-hmm. And then for us to kind of understand, what's been great about this is that being up close and personal with the composer, we as performers get to understand what he wants. And so then we convey that. So,
and Casey, what do you think Fran Hammerström would think about Enchanted Moonscape?
I think she'd love the title and thoroughly enjoy that, you know, Fran liked the best of things. Whenever she went after testimonials for the back of her book jackets and things, she went to some of her top writers and top people in the field, quotes from Roger Torrey Peterson and Conrad Lorenz and things. And I'm going to have to go shortly, but I thought maybe the best way to wrap up my segment would be to end with her philosophy and, from the back of My Double Life. And after Frederick had died, she actually went to the warmer climates, the Pygmies and the in Africa and Peru. So she said, I'm going back to the rainforest. Pygmies and Indians, among the oldest races of mankind, have lived in forests and jungles since time immemorial and have not destroyed their habitat. No white people can say the same. Also, whenever I've gone in my far and wide travels in civilized countries, in each, I have encountered overpopulation with its twin horrors, human misery and despoliation of the environment. If we are to preserve this beautiful world of ours with its creatures, great and small, and their wondrous homes, we must have fewer people on Earth. We must have fewer children, or the beauty of the wild will be gone, and our security as well.
And when did she write that?
1994 is when the autobiography came out, and the other, I I'm going to reinforce what Anne said. If you met her or were introduced to her work or her science in any way, she all of a sudden becomes a lifelong friend. And I think it's amazing that she has been gone from us almost 15 years, and her books were published since 1970. So that's a long testimony to their legacy.
Casey, Fran Hammerstrom was also a hunter. At a time when it was something that polite women just didn't do. And she did grow up in kind of a privileged background, right?
She did.
And she gave all that up.
She gave it up. She would often say to marry the tall, dark, handsome man of her dreams.
And she wrote a book titled, Is She Coming To? Memoirs of a Lady Hunter.
Yes. And Jonathan Wilde, who's a renowned artist, did the illustrations for that. Her daughter, Elva Hammerstrom Paulson, illustrated a number of her books, including illustrations in My Double Life, Memoirs of a Naturalist. And then her first female gaboon and illustrator of...
You've got to explain to people what a gaboon is.
I will. And
it is not a primate. Well, it is a primate, but an advanced primate.
Dionne Delarand was her first female gaboon. And gaboon was an African term that... more or less meant servant. And so I was her literary gaboon.
So gaboons are human servants of Fran Hammerstrom.
Slave could be another term.
She also wrote a cookbook, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Rick Ryer, our executive producer of Route 51, handed that to me before the show. It's called The Wild Food Cookbook, in which she offers recipes for fried snake, ground squirrel, larded breast of crow, and puffball salad, among others.
And let's not forget woodchuck, which actually is, you know, now it's very topical. It's been in the news the last couple of days how woodchuck may be taken off of the endangered list and maybe actually be able to be served up on the table again.
And she also believed in eating every part of an animal. Her recipes for venison included fried deer kidneys, deer brains, deer heart, deer tongue, and lung soup, among other delicacies.
And think if she were living today, Glenn, she would be having her own cooking show, I'm sure of it.
It'd be a hit.
I'll
tell you that much. It'd be a hit. Casey, anything you'd like to add? We know you have to leave us for another appointment this evening.
There's so many wonderful words that were written by her, and her ability to translate the science even into non-birder language. I think it was through the art of storytelling. So the concert's just another wonderful compliment to them, and we're going on Sunday evening, and I hope we sell out.
So. Okay. Anne Huntoon, as we mentioned, the concerts on Saturday and Sunday also feature the return to the stage of Catalin Rotaro, the great double bassist who taught music at UW Stevens Point for many years. Mm-hmm. And we have links to the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra on our Facebook page. If you want to go onto that webpage and buy tickets, you can just follow the links. And also Hammerstrom's induction into the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame on our Route 51 Facebook page. Well, Catalin will be performing Haydn's Cello Concerto No. 1 in C major. So, Anne, let's listen to a portion of that. Here we're going to listen to Catalin Rotaro. And the things that sound like violins, that's actually him playing the double bass in the upper register. Catalin performing with the National University of Music Symphony Orchestra in Bucharest. Thanks again to Casey Martin. When we return, we'll be joined by conservationist Sharon Schwab, who provided some of the bird sounds for Enchanted Moonscape and who is following in the footsteps of Fran Hammerstrom by working to save habitat in central Wisconsin, critical to our wildlife here, including the greater prairie chicken. I'm Glenn Wilbrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg with Ann Huntoon, the Executive Director of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra. Also, Charles Rochester Martin, who wrote a piece called Enchanted Moonscape for the, Charles Rochester Young. Sometimes I get talking too fast and I make mistakes like that. That's who wrote right. a piece called Enchanted Moonscape for the concerts that they're doing this Saturday and Sunday. And joining us by telephone now, Sharon Schwab, who's a conservationist, who, Sharon, I know you find Fran Hammerstrom really inspirational yourself.
You do. She was wonderful to know, although I knew her briefly, and I also had met her husband very long ago, but just wonderful, eccentric, and just amazing people, yes.
And you helped Charles get some of the bird sounds for the piece that he put together?
Yeah, it was really quite fun. Excuse me. I sent out notification to ornithologists and biologists that I knew that were either working for state, federal, or local agencies or organizations, people that belong to conservation organization. And you know what happens with an email? Oftentimes they just go all over the place. And we asked people to contribute sounds of the night, sounds of the early morning, sounds of the at dusk, and the responses that came back from people of some of their favorite sounds were just, you know, very heartfelt and very emotional in some cases of what people think of maybe at spring. They're thinking of spring peepers, which we might normally hear under a regular spring, or maybe it was the whippoorwill like you heard, or right now you might be hearing woodcocks painting. So there were all kinds of sounds that were favorites of them that they shared with Charles when he was writing his piece.
Sharon, we're going to listen to another excerpt from Enchanted Moonscape. And, Charles, this is you feature the sounds of a great horned owl, and I think there are some other birds and critters in this particular piece of the music, and you can fill us in on the other side.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra performing Enchanted Moonscape, and again, that is not a professional recording. It was recorded with a rather inexpensive personal recording device that you had, Charles.
Right, in a rehearsal, right.
at the rehearsal. So, go out and see it this weekend. We heard the great horned owl, and I heard sort of like a croaking sound, but I think that was probably made by the musicians. It sounded like a bullfrog.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of animal sounds that are simulated by different sections of the orchestra and things like that, and I don't want to give away all the surprises and things like that necessarily for the performance, but I think audiences will recognize the sounds of a number of different things that they might experience in a central Wisconsin evening. And really the piece kind of depicts what it would be like if you were walking through the course of an evening and the different things that you might encounter.
It's like coming in and out of a dream.
That's hopefully the
feeling I get from it, and the full moon and all of the different birds and animals that live in our woods here in central Wisconsin.
Right, and there's visual effects and all sorts of other things that can't be captured on the recording as well that hopefully audiences will find engaging and meaningful to them.
One bird that's very significant for central Wisconsin, and it's one that was important to Fran Hammerstrom, was the greater prairie chicken. And Sharon Schwab, that's something that's been the focus of your life for a long time, trying to save its habitat, trying to save these birds, which were almost extinct in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think what Fran and Fred spent much of their life doing was to save them from what's known as extirpation, which is like a local extinction from an area or from a state. And they were successful in thwarting the bird's demise here in Wisconsin by garnering both public and private support to secure the habitat that we have here today. And much of their efforts resulted in some of the acreage we have, and we are very lucky to have places like the Paul J. Olson Wildlife Area, Mead Wildlife Area, Buena Vista Wildlife Area, and Loyola. And there are greater prairie chickens that are still found, and found in some numbers, particularly in Paul Olson, Loyola, and Buena Vista, that are, you know, relatively stable population that is there really as a result of their efforts to get people to understand the significance.
Wisconsin, which really epitomizes the grass
plant environment.
Now, we had a really, in fact, are still having a really late spring this year. There's still snow on the ground in many locations. Has that delayed the prairie chickens and their mating ritual, or are they out on the booming grounds as scheduled this year?
Well, I'm going to let one of your guests tell you about his experience this morning, but I'll tell you that the birds are there. A lot of their reproduction is based more on the amount of light that's in the sky than there is necessarily the weather, although I will tell you, when the weather is rather inclement like it is today, the boys may not be as active on the booming ground as they might be normally, but they're still there. They're quite stoic, and they're there every morning hoping that female might come around.
Charles, you were out in the blinds this morning?
I was out in the blinds this morning with my mom and my daughter both.
And how early was that?
Well, we got up at 3:15, and we were in the blinds by before 5 o'clock this morning. And got to see the sun come up, and it was extraordinary. I mean, we had, probably 12 birds that were out the entire time we were there, and I would say 10 of them at any given point in time were really active, and the sound and all of it was just
spectacular. It's really a life-changing experience, isn't it? It was for me when I went out a few years ago. Yeah. In fact, this was several years ago. I was out with my son Thomas. He was 11 at the time, and two other bird watchers, Joe and Linda Varga. I put together a story on my experience out in the blinds with the three other bird watchers for Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a portion of it.
Linda Varga is waiting for the prairie chickens to arrive.
This is something I wanted to do for a lot of years. One of the things I can cross off my list.
Linda and Joe Varga of Kellner sit with me and my 11-year-old son, Tommy, cramped together in a short, narrow wooden box in the middle of the Buena Vista grasslands.
How many of them do you see?
A bunch.
16.
14. 16. 17.
The first rays of sunlight hit the cold prairie,
shining bright orange on the rooster's puffed-out throat sacs.
The orange is awesome. Can you see the orange?
Yeah, you can see the orange.
Isn't that vibrant?
The male birds square off, strutting, jumping into the air, doing backward somersaults, marking their tiny territories, and slashing at their rivals.
Them spurs like you, just like on a chicken, you know, they're trying to hit each other with them.
Trying to claim their little territory.
For Joe Varga, the memories remain.
The display of the feathers and the air sacked, you know, and their dance, their ritual, stomping and trying to protect a little area, I think that's so neat.
For Linda, it's neat that the birds are even here.
They were hunted almost to extinction, and farmland took away their homes, and it's pretty cool.
They're still here.
They're still here, doing their thing.
It's a life-changing experience being out on the central Wisconsin grasslands, having a chance to see that. Charles, you know, it had to have blown your mind this morning.
Well, it was just amazing. And, you know, the sound coming from so many different directions and all of the, you know, the mist and everything like that coming up off the ground, you know, as the sun was coming up, is just spectacular. I would recommend it to anybody.
And that maniacal laughter, you know, it's incredible. You know, for those of you who are listening to this, if you haven't done it, especially if you have a youngster in your house, it's worth it. You have to get up at 3 a.m. if you live far away. You've got to rent a hotel room probably the night before, but it's worth it. You will never, ever forget it. Sharon, what's the future of the species, the prairie chicken in central Wisconsin? We've got just a fraction of its numbers confined to a very small patch of land. Does it even have the genetic diversity that it needs to survive?
Well, the question you're asking is a good one. I mean, the population we have here is stable. However, about 8 years ago, there was a genetics council that was convened with geneticists from around the country. And at that time, the recommendation that was made was that for the health, the genetic diversity, to ensure the genetic diversity of our greater prairie chicken of Wisconsin, that one of the ideas that's been used successfully for other species is to try to infuse the local population with other birds. And so what happened then over a course of 3 years is nearly 100 hens were translocated here from the western part of Minnesota, where the population's approximately 10 size our current population, which is somewhere between 800 and 1,000 birds. And it appears now that the Genetics Council has reconvened in early 2013, at least anecdotally, it looks as if that translocation has been successful. And there appears to be an increase of genetic diversity among our birds here. So with the areas that we have, with the population that we have, we're not seeing precipitous declines and we're not seeing great rises, but we're seeing a stable population. And in order to ensure that, the belief is that this increase of genetic diversity will ensure that stability.
Well, let's hope so. And we do have photos of a great horned owl and a greater prairie chicken on our Facebook page. Sharon Schwab, conservationist who's working to save the habitat of the prairie chicken and other important species. Also, Ann Huntoon, the executive director of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, and Charles Rochester Young, who wrote this, composed this beautiful piece that's going to be performed this weekend, Enchanted Moonscape, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're looking at music and the life of Fran Hammerstrom on Route 51. And we do have a flood watch in effect through Friday morning. Rain and drizzling rain mixed with snow after midnight tonight, a low of 30. Friday, light snow up to an inch of accumulation, blustery with a high of 36. Sunny skies on Saturday, then light rain mixed with light snow again on Sunday. We've got 39 degrees right now outside our studios in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're wrapping up a very interesting, and I should say challenging, episode of Route 51 to work in all of this music and all of this talk about saving the environment and the natural world. But I think we've kind of pulled it all together.
You did a nice job.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your experience in the blind watching the prairie chickens.
Yes, we had the opportunity last Saturday morning, and it's been on my bucket list. I was interested to hear Mrs. Varga there talk about her experience and crossing it off her list. And my husband and I, my husband is 6'4", and we looked at that blind out there, and we were wondering how four people were going to fit into it. That was our first issue, and we got in there, and it was a magical spiritual experience to watch the sun come up. And then it was not foggy on Saturday morning. It was quite cold. And about 5:57, six male birds came in and landed. And we didn't see any girls, but they were certainly doing their dancing. And we did have snow, so it was just a beautiful effect to see the snow underneath their feet.
And this concert that's coming up, it's got to be a challenging one as well.
Yes, there have been moments this whole season that have presented challenges, but that's the fun part about it. And there's nothing like a concert weekend. And for us, we all love doing what we're doing there. And we finish Saturday night, and the best part of that is we get to get up on Sunday and do it all over again.
And to have the world premiere of an original composition. Charles, you've got to be a little bit on pins and needles, aren't you? I mean, really.
Well, it's exciting. There's a lot of different things involved in the piece, and Tuesday night's actually the first time that I heard all of the various segments come together for the first time. So it is very exciting, without a doubt. So.
And I do want to mention that Wisconsin Public Radio will be recording that concert for a later broadcast. So, something that you shouldn't miss. And when will we have an opportunity to go out and buy a CD of Enchanted Moonscape?
I don't know. It kind of depends on what the life of the piece is, you know, after this first performance and things like that. But certainly if people wanted to have a recording of the Central Wisconsin Symphony performing it, then they could probably get that from Ann, I'm guessing.
Sure. We'll talk about that after the concert's over.
And Sharon, this is an important weekend. It always is for conservationists. John Muir's birthday on Sunday, and then Earth Day on Monday, both of them quintessential Wisconsin holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, indeed. And it's just so wonderful that also the work of the late and great, you know, Fred and Fran Hammerstrand is going to be honored in such a wonderful way by hearing all these things come together, music, art, literature, nature. It's just wonderful.
And again, we want to mention that webpage, cwso.org, for the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra. And you can follow that and follow the links, and it'll tell you how to get tickets. And I think we're going to leave with a little more of Haydn's Cello Concerto with Catalin Rotaro. We do want to thank today's guest, Dr. Charles Rochester Young, composer of Enchanted Moonscape, that world premiere this Saturday and Sunday at the Century Theater in Stevens Point. Also, the executive director of the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, Ann Huntoon, conservationist Sharon Schwab, and writer-publicist and friend of the late Fran Hammerstrom, Casey Martin. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by Charles Rochester Young, the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra, Joseph Haydn, Catalin Rotaro, and the National University of Music Symphony Orchestra in Bucharest. You can find out more about the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra on their webpage, cwso.org. Those concerts are Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon, at the Century Theater in Stevens Point, sponsored by the Marshfield Clinic, the Mead-Witter Foundation, and Wisconsin Public Radio. Route 51 is heard every Thursday at 5 o'clock on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau and 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, WHAA 89.1 FM Adams, Wisconsin Rapids, WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3, and now on our newest station, WHSF 89.9 FM Rhinelander Eagle River. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we are heading out of town. Thank you.
Thank you.